Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Two Toes Williams.
What?
I don't know, maybe you had two toes on one of your feet.
Don't make me feel like I missed something in the movie. Come on.
We got a great show in stores. We're going to be discussing the recently dropped musical In the Heights on HBO Max because we weren't going to go to the theaters to see it.
Nope.
Also with us is intern Amy, who
Hello.
Is now moving to very, very part-time status.
What?
So we can officially name her a part-time filmlosopher.
A double part-time? Does that make me a full-time part-timer?
I mean, you don't get a parking space or anything.
I'm okay with that.
It just makes you more accountable to the things that you're supposed to be doing.
Do I get access to the company card?
No.
No.
Oh.
I mean, it's the Uno card that's on the floor over there. You're more than welcome to it.
It's a reverse.
At least it's not a +4. I'm okay with the reverse.
We got a great show in store as we're excited to talk about this musical, this everything that has come about from the genius mind of Lin-Manuel Miranda. So stick around as we talk about that. But before we do, of course, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website. We got over 270 episodes. We are up there in the numbers. We're almost pushing 300. Maybe we should set a goal for like 300. I don't know. Maybe.
We shave his head.
Whose head? His hair is already as low as possible. Shave my head? Yeah, that's
That'd
not going to happen.
That'd be interesting.
Check us out on our website, filmlosophers.com. Also check us out on a bunch of streaming platforms all over the place. We got it there. I don't need to tell you. You already hear it enough from me, but iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Spotify, Pandora, Audioboom.
Like all the places.
All the places. So check us out there. Let us know what you think. But we are excited, like I said, to talk about In the Heights. This film was kind of one of those most anticipated films of the last year. Ever since we had heard that they were going to make a film adaptation out of it, it made sense to see it brought to the silver screen. So we're excited to talk about this film. Of course, the majority, I'm pretty sure you two as well, Spence, we're all here fans of Lin-Manuel Miranda and the things that he's created. Things like with Hamilton, we've talked about before. You actually, it wasn't just you guys. I was on that episode too as well.
The Hamilton episode?
Yeah, when we reviewed Hamilton last year during the pandemic.
The Hamilton episode?
I don't remember Hamilton.
I know, I think I wasn't on the Shrek one.
Yeah, you weren't on the Shrek one.
Yeah, the second one I think I was on for. Oh, thanks. I think. I don't know.
We'll have to find that episode and go listen back to that lesson.
Very true. But before we move any forward in talking about In the Heights, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Lights up on Washington Heights. The scent of a cafecito caliente hangs in the air just outside on of the 181st Street subway stop. Where a kaleidoscope of dreams rallies. You know what? You're right. This is hard to talk with someone talking.
I told you. I said it. And I'm like, I know what I'm talking about. Both of you guys are like, oh, you just turn it down. And
because
just bring
I was thinking about if I was talking, not if I was reading. That's way different.
I can do it. It's just
very, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
At the intersection of it all is the likable, magnetic bodega owner, Uznavi, who saves every penny from his daily grind as he hopes, imagines, and sings about a better life.
That's right. Directed by John M. Chu and based on the stage musical of the same name by Cuara Alegria Hudes and Lin-Manuel Miranda, which, by the way, John Chu is also the director of Crazy Rich Asians, so already a great rapport with that director. The film stars Anthony Ramos, Corey Hawkins, Leslie Grace, Melissa Barrera, Olga Meredes, Daphne Ruben Vega, Gregory Diaz IV, and Jimmy Smits. The crazy thing about Jimmy Smits is that he was actually an early Heights supporter off-Broadway before the musical was even adapted to the screen. When he was asked to do the voiceover for the TV advertisement, he wouldn't accept any payment. He just wanted some house seats for Broadway. So that tells you a lot about somebody who is a huge supporter of something and believes in it, even before it hits the big time. Because this is even before us talking about Broadway. This is off-Broadway. So these are the offshoot streets that are near Broadway that also have that houses musicals. Our musical expert across the table is giving me an approval.
I'm not an expert. I'm an enthusiast.
In terms of this table here, you're the expert. So yes, we'll give you that credit. But the fact that you have somebody like Jimmy Smits. Jimmy Smits has been a longtime actor, producer. He's been in the writer's seat. I'm pretty sure he's been a producer, and knowing somebody like that who has the clout that he brings and able to say, you know what, I believe in this so much, you don't even need to pay me, just let me have seats when it is in Broadway so that way I can be front row to watch. I mean, that's really awesome, personally, I think. It speaks towards like everything that Lin-Manuel Miranda has created. Speaking of what Lin-Manuel has created, one of the recurring characters... or not recurring characters, but recurring actors and performers in a lot of his works, Christopher Jackson. Mm-hmm. He actually originated the role of Benny on Broadway and actually has appeared in almost every musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda, including
his whole two musicals.
Oh, well, I mean, we don't know if there's other things he's written.
This probably is. And considering that Christopher Jackson, for anyone that doesn't know him as the ice cream truck owner, Mr. Softy ice cream.
He also played George Washington in the original cast of Hamilton. Because of course,
also available on Disney Plus.
True.
Please sponsor us.
Where if you were fortunate enough to see the end credit scene, that kind of showcases Lin-Manuel and Christopher Jackson in like one final kind of who owns the street more than who kind of scene. It's really great. It was really fun. And to be quite frank, I didn't know there was an end credit scene until after the fact. So it was one of those things where going back to it was like an additional treat for people who didn't know, you know? So talking about the musical... it's really interesting that the fact that after the pandemic, one of the first things that they begin to start publicizing as a film that's going to be in theaters is going to be this one. This was one that was talked about ahead of time, that HBO and Warner Brothers were going to do this thing where they were going to showcase the film on HBO Max, and then they're also going to showcase it in theaters as well. And I'm going to be frank, at first, before seeing the trailer, because the trailer dropped like last year.
I dropped in 2019.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, hey, it was okay. About 2 years ago.
2020 kind of went as a blur.
Originally this was supposed to come out summer of 2020.
Yeah.
And they ended up pushing it back and pushing it back. So we were thinking, oh, maybe it'll be October, maybe it'll be November, maybe it'll be January 2021. We'll talk about expectation, but the hold off lined up with some of the themes and the temperatures, literal temperatures in the movie, to have it come out during the summer.
It made sense. And it definitely was one of those types of judgment calls that, unfortunately, even though it made us wait longer, we'll talk about it, but how the anticipation kind of paid off a bit. Really quick, Spencer, can you think better now that the talking is done?
Yeah.
No.
But first thing first, I want to see your guys' expectations on this film, because of the fact that us knowing... So, Spencer,
yeah,
you being somebody who has just recently kind of started finding a slight attraction, I'm not going to say you're full boat in.
That's already really strong.
Okay. So your attraction to musicals, what were some of the things you were hoping to see with this particular one? Because I don't know, had you even heard of In the Heights prior to...
Yes, you told me about it.
No, before they announced the actual film, like before they did the trailer for it.
No.
Okay, well, that's what I was wondering. See, that's the kind of thing that I'm asking, because this thing came out in, I want to say 2008? Or
2007, 2008, I'm checking, because they won a Tony for Best Musical.
Yeah. Oh. And
From the jump.
And even then, there's the off-Broadway... variation prior to. But so you hadn't heard of it prior to?
Nope.
So after you saw the trailers and so forth, what were some of your big expectations?
Okay.
Okay.
Honestly, the first time I saw the trailer, we were in the theater for some other movie. And
oh, that's right. Yeah.
And the trailer was playing, and I was like, I don't want to see this movie. And then after the trailer, and you were like, oh, we should totally go see this. And I'm like,
by the way, it was a 2007 off Broadway run. I was right.
Yeah, and they won the Tony for Best Musical in 2018, as well as for Best Score. I remember Best Composition. They were nominated for 13 Tonys. They won 4. Okay. Shazam-y.
Cool. So after, because I know that your journey with musicals, it's funny to say this, but it has been for you a literal journey of kind of learning to accept or even find ones that you like. What would you call that?
I don't know. Tolerate? Because
I think toleration is like a really off word, because you're not tolerating musicals anymore. You're actually liking them.
Palatable.
Well, that might actually be a better word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. See, look at that.
See,
part-timer coming in. Yeah.
We give her a title, and now she steps up. Go figure. So now that your palette is changing for musicals, what were some of the things that you were hoping this one was going to do that you liked about other ones? Coming out the gates punching. Come on.
I don't think I thought. See, the thing is like some of the things I like. About, like, let's talk Shrek the Musical.
Yeah.
One, I think that's actually probably my favorite musical.
Literally the one that won you over to start out with.
But that did things that I just didn't think other musicals would ever do.
Made him feel like a man.
For instance, like that travel song
Donkey
is constantly annoying Shrek with it, and then once Donkey gets scared about something, Shrek brings the song back, and it's really like, I was like, that's such an interesting way to have a song in a movie.
Yeah.
And, like, seeing, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the music in that movie, incredibly well done, but it's not like that. It's much more...
I think the one thing, and I believe we mentioned it in the review, the one thing that kind of struck it as a difficult thing for Hamilton is that it was a non-stop musical. There was no kind of...
It's a sing-through.
Yeah.
It was non-stop.
Non-stop. Yeah, I got your joke.
Yeah.
So, sorry. Yes, so there's the difference in musicals where there's a sing-through musical where there is literally all dialogue expression comes through music,
we
which can be...
talked about this already.
I know, but I mean... Oh. I'll go back to my intern hat.
Oh my gosh. Was that part of like what was different for you?
Yeah, like there was a lot of singing in this movie. Like
in this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I probably could have done with less.
So expectations wise?
I mean honestly it was hard to really gauge this movie because like the trailer kinda seemed like it was going to be really into, like, you know, tons of singing. But, like, you know, I have found some that I did like. So I was really uncertain about, like, where any of this is going.
So it could have gone either way for you.
Yeah.
What about you, Amy? I know you've actually heard of In the Heights, even though you do.
Reading notes, thanks.
Uh-huh. When it came to this particular film, you were already familiar with In the Heights.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some of the things that you were hoping to see in terms of paying homage or making sure they honored the original?
Well, initially from the trailer, I was kind of excited to see how they were going to do it. They're taking it from a stage, which is always face forward, where there is some suspension of belief or disbelief. Pardon me. There's some suspension of disbelief that goes on when you're in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then also being able to actually see it taking place in Washington Heights was really cool. So I was hoping that they would Mind you, I like that Spencer said there was too much singing because they cut out a lot of songs. There's a lot more songs than there is. Like, woo. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, real quick. How do you know how long the musical is?
Oh, it's a couple of hours. Oh, dear. Okay. There's two. Well, there's two acts, two acts and an intermission. And an intermission, Bubba. Oh. If you thought Hamilton was long, just wait. Which is actually very normal and traditional for most theater, for musicals.
Oh.
But this was, so expectations, I was hoping that they would actually do a good job, pay homage. I knew they weren't going to be able to fit everything in, but I was kind of interested to see what the changes were going to be. And when we get to where we're going, I'll talk about whether I was happy or not about the things that I saw that were different from the musical to the movie. And yeah. Yeah.
You don't say. I just, for me, one of the biggest things, so honestly, this particular musical, it strikes a different chord than like things like Hamilton or other musicals that have made, that are making or that have made on-screen adaptations. I mean, we're kind of on the cusp of
West Side Story, Singing in the Rain, Hello Dolly, Music Man, Mame, Oklahoma, Carousel, Meet Me in St. Louis, Daddy Long Legs. I could keep going.
Unfortunately, you could, but we don't need you to.
Lame.
Technically, that went from on-screen to musical adaptation.
Yeah, that one was kind of fun.
Anyway, so like I was saying, we're on the cusp of things like Dear Evan Hansen being made. I'm more than certain that are a ton of other properties, IPOs, that are on the process of being made into on-screen adaptations.
Wicked. Sorry. Go. I'm going to put back on my intern hat.
Yeah, we may have to take that title away. So this being In the Heights, all the other ones, they're fine and all that, and everybody has their own niche. Like, everybody has their own musical that speaks towards them, so obviously. You know, you have people who really resonate with Dear Evan Hansen, people who really resonate with Percy Jackson, the musical, people who really resonate with every single thing that Amy said that didn't really, it wasn't really what we're talking about. But there's a ton of musicals that are out there for everybody. And for me, seeing something like In the Heights, the trailer itself kind of sparked a lot of like, of that Latin pride, if you will, that kind of, you don't really see in things that are more lighthearted like this. Like the last movie I saw, or the last movie that comes to mind when I think of a movie where there's Latinos and Latinas in a community like this that was in like Washington Heights, was kind of like The Bronx Tale. Like I recall movies like that, but there's usually like a negative connotation. There's usually some type of negative impact. There's gangs there. There's shooting here. There's robbery there. There's these things there. Like they're never really put in positive light. So to see an opportunity where, much like, and no offense to you, Amy, I'm going to use the white card here, but no offense to like some other movies that have like predominantly white, you know, characters, where that whole suspension of disbelief, like you said, mm-hmm. can be had, and it's like Perfectville or like what it's the world is fine and dandy, or
like Pleasantville.
Well,
like that movie?
Well, similar to that, but that kind of, that's an interesting, yes, just like that. Things like that, the Stepford Wives, things where there's like an element of perfection in you know, in place of everything, and it can actually start out that way, and people can say, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. For this particular film, it was like, it wasn't like, oh, everything is hunky-dory and nobody worries about a thing. It's the fact that it's an honest and earnest look at real hardworking Latinos. Well, maybe not real, but people who they emulate, people they're, you know, mm-hmm. symbolizing, and not just the negative parts, like, oh, Mexicans or Hispanics or you know, they're drug dealers or they're these things or they're those things. Like, it was like an opportunity to actually see a moment of a proud observation of the culture I come from, you know? So seeing the trailer, it was like, man, that's actually cool. I can actually see a film where I don't have to worry about, oh, but Usnavi can't leave the store alone because his little cousin is actually also hooked on drugs and he steals money from Usnavi, and so Usnavi has to whatever, whatever. Like, there's small moments, like, once we get into it, mind you, there are small moments where things like that are there, but they don't have a large impact in the overall community and story of the film.
Well, so, they're not driving the stereotypical expectations.
We'll get into that after, right in just a
That's
second.
That's why I just literally said that and left it alone.
So it sounds like you both just want to jump right in. So jumping right in, because it seems like both of you guys are just ready to spill. Spencer, first thoughts, first impressions as soon as you were done watching the movie.
This movie is so long.
It's not bad, but it's
2 hours and 23 minutes long. Yeah. I mean, you did Stan Hamilton for 2 hours and 40.
Like, I took breaks in Hamilton. But, like, this... Like, I audibly gasped when I saw that it was 2.5 hours. I was like, oh, jeez. But, you know, like, it's not bad. Like, I liked it. Uh-huh. I can say that honestly.
Okay.
This is true, yeah. So, like, you know, afterwards, I was like, okay... Yeah, I'll have to make sure I watch it again when I have more time.
Musical in the Heights stage production is 2 hours and 40 as well.
They only shaved like 20 minutes off? I guess you could fit quite a lot of songs in 20 minutes.
I mean, if you keep them at like 5 minutes a song or 4 minutes a song.
Less than that. Well, I mean, it's usually three.
And some of these songs that we saw, like, obviously are just like 1-2 minute songs, little blurps here and there. Amy.
Hiya.
What were some of your first thoughts as soon as the film ended?
They moved around some of the stories, some of the songs to match and create a stronger story. There were a couple of changes lyrically that I appreciated. It was well acted. There were moments that shouted out, like, were shout outs to different movies, like old Hollywood type of things that mm-hmm. happened that I will definitely talk about later. And it was delightful, considering that, wow, my brain just turned off there for a second because I looked at the sugar and I was like, oh, look, azúcar.
Oh my gosh.
My brain. It was a great it had representation in it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't overfraught. So I was impressed. And also the little nuggets that were in there from not just Lin-Manuel.
From but Broadway in general.
For Broadway, for movies, for some of the shots. Like, there was care taken in creating this, and in such a celebration of not only the people, but the community as a whole. It made me happy.
Yeah, I really kind of resonate with what you're saying in terms of the fact that this movie, it was a good movie. It was a little on the long side, but... For me, I kind of was engrossed in everything that was going on because of the fact that every part of the film, it spoke to me on some level, whether if it was my personal pride or even on a level of, you know, my traditional pride, things like that, it spoke. I loved all the little nods to just musicals in general, people like Christopher Jackson, seeing him as the Mr. Frosty. Seeing Patrick Page, Hades from Hadestown, him being the
Judge Frollo from
Hunchback of Notre Dame,
Broadway.
But he was the tailor.
He was the dry cleaner.
Next door. All those little things here and there, it was great.
The You're Welcome Hold music that Jimmy Schmidt had to listen to.
That was great because I got that reference.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't You're Welcome. It was You'll Be Back.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
George, You'll Be Back. Your daughter would be very upset with you since you got that wrong.
Yeah, my brain was like, tracking.
Do you want me to hide the sugar?
Right?
Yeah. No, just kidding. You're good.
I love the fact that this musical spoke on so many different levels outside of just personal growth to community pride. And it didn't, like I said, my expectation was right on the money in terms of not having to see, like, the fact that, oh, because it's all Hispanics or it's all Latinos, there has to be some rotten apple element that kind of sours the bunch. And that's typical. I mean, Spencer, I'm pretty sure you can see that as well. Like, with a lot of movies that are predominantly black characters, something has to happen. Either somebody gets shot in a gang shooting, or somebody dies of a drug overdose, or gets, you know, inducted into like some gang and they're now a part of the gang instead of, like, there's always some element, or there's always some element making fun of that. Like, it's kind of our stereotypical MO in terms of in movies. So having an opportunity where the movie is just like, hey, this is just Latinos who are proud of their heritage, proud of where they come from, trying to make it in the day-to-day life. It looked like you wanted to say something.
There was one moment in the movie where, like, there was a blackout, and, like, I saw this guy running out of the building with, like, a bag, and I was like, oh gosh, I hope this isn't gonna happen. And he's like, I got fireworks. And I'm like, oh good. I don't think that's gonna work as well as you think, but great.
Yeah, they actually, so a quick note on that one. So they actually use, in the musical, there's the blackout, and Sonny and Graffiti Pete, who's the guy that we originally, he chases away at the beginning, his name is Graffiti Pete. They are worried that Usnavi's bodega is going to get ransacked and looted. So they light fireworks outside of it, but also to help everybody kind of get home in the blackout to protect it and keep things lit. So
that's smart, but I got fireworks.
You're like, yeah, get them fireworks.
Yeah, that was really interesting. There's no indication of that in the film.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
which I thought was odd, actually, watching. I was like, oh, someone's gonna go to the store, right? Because, like,
yeah,
someone's gonna protect it, right?
At the beginning, he was already riding on the outside. I was like, it's only a matter of time,
right? I have expected, like, one of those fireworks to, like, fall on somebody's rooftop and start
catch
a fire.
On fire. Like, you did too. Or the laundry, that I hit the laundry and just everybody's
exactly.
clothes go up.
Exactly. Because we all know everybody washes their clothes with kerosene. So I'm just saying. Yeah. but I felt kind of placated in the fact that I didn't have to worry about, upon second viewing, like, seeing a movie that, oh, I missed that one moment where, you know, the abuela actually was keeping somebody, you know, taken care of, like, at rehab or something, and that's why, whatever, for whatever reasons. It was good to just see a good, earnest film about my people, I guess, bottom line of that. And there's not many of those that comes around. And there is something I do want to talk about later down the road, as we talk about this, of an article I saw that I kind of got me upset. But I'll tell you guys about it in a little bit.
The representation article? There's a representation controversy. We can talk about that later.
Yeah, there's. Then might be talking about two different ones. This one was from the New Yorker.
Mm. We'll see about that.
So talking about acting, you got, like we said, you got Anthony Ramos, who plays Usnavi. You have Leslie Grace. You have Corey Hawkins, Jimmy Smits. I'm not gonna lie, I was surprised, to say the least, to hear Jimmy Smits sing. I don't know if I liked it all the way, but the fact that he gave it the good old college try, hey, he did well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad there wasn't a lot of it, but I'm just saying, Senator Organa can stick to galactic, you know, politics. Exactly. But his character, I'm going to be completely transparent. Jimmy Smits went hard on the Latin character, and I appreciated it. I mean, he seemed legit. I've seen Jimmy Smits in a lot of things. He used to be on that NYPD Blue.
I thought you were going to bring up Sons of Anarchy.
Was he in Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah.
He's in Dexter.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
He was in The Tommyknockers, which is a Stephen King movie. Nobody knows that one here. That's Balky. You're thinking of Balky. Balky's in...
Sorry, it's happened.
Seeing Jimmy Smits, like, play a legit hardcore Latino dad who's trying to make ends meet for his daughter to go to college, that man went hard and he hit it right on the money. Mm-hmm. Like, if I hadn't seen anything of Jimmy Smits prior to, I would honestly believe that was the way he was all the time. Like, from his accent to the way he looked, like, those looks he gave his daughter, I've seen those looks. I know what those looks mean, and I'm like, oh, she in trouble. So I gotta give credit to where credit is due. Jimmy Smits was probably the most standout performer for me because of the fact that I didn't know he could, like, reach down that deep into his Latin roots and pull that out. I don't know. What about you? What did you think? Who do you think was a outstanding performer, Amy?
Let us bring up the originator of Abuela Claudia, Olga, and I will butcher her last name, and I apologize. I think it's Merediz, Meredyz. This woman won a Tony for that role.
Which she, I don't know if you've elaborated, you've stated it, you skated over it slightly, but the fact that she played one of the original Broadway versions.
She is the original.
No, there's one before her.
Well, is that the off-Broadway or the Broadway?
It's the off-Broadway.
And she's the Broadway, yes?
She's both. So halfway through, Doreen Montalvo played Abuela Claudia, and then Olga came in afterwards.
I'm sorry, Maureen, that you didn't get that Tony, girl.
Doreen.
But
she played one of the, if not pretty much the more memorable original Abuela Claudia.
And she's also coming back to reprise her role, which is something where a lot of the other cast had either aged out or otherwise, like Lynn and Christopher Jackson. Both of them were playing different roles that were not what they originated on Broadway. She was knocked down, drag out, fantastic, just absolutely stunning actress. And it was so good to see in that role. And then I had one other one. Daphne Rubin Vega, who was... she's Carla. She's not Daniela. She's the salon owner. She was so much fun. She was like just vibrant and alive, and it was a delight to see her whenever she showed up on screen.
Daniela plays. So the role of Daniela plays pretty much. Very
was she
closely.
Carla or Daniela?
Daphne was Daniela.
Daniela.
Oh, my bad. Because Carla was...
Carla was the one who is a little... Kind of... So Daniela and Carla are the two originals from the actual musical. But then you also have the third one in the Cuca. Film. Cuca is the one that's the more kind of curvy, kind of growlish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the movie.
She was entertaining as in of herself. She's like, hey.
She was doing the most in
you're
that
like,
one.
Girl, shush, calm down, love.
The Daniela in the movie, because I haven't seen any footage from the actual musical, but the Daniela from the movie is very reminiscent to pretty much every aunt that I've ever known, and who's loud like that, especially after they've gotten a few drinks in them. If any of my tias are listening, I'm sorry to pour the tea out on this, but like you guys are nuts. Once the alcohol flows, they are like, andale, bring the music, and they're yelling and they're wanting to dance, and they'll mijo, come dance with me, like all like staggering over. I'm like, tia, go sit down. Like, there are so many stories that I can get into, and my brother can probably talk about them as well. But like, seriously, when it comes to the character of Daniela, even from Carla, even from Cuca, I mean, Lord knows there's so many Cucas out there in the extended family. Everybody, even the what was Jimmy Smith's character?
Kevin Rosario.
Oh, either way, like there's people like that I can look at and I can pinpoint in my family, like who they're emulating, and it's interesting because knowing that and making that connection with a lot of those people made it much easier to create that connection in the film for me. But no joke, that No Me Diga song, that's literally everybody in my family whenever they get together, like. Nombre, did you hear about your cousin Vincent? Nombre, did you hear about your cousin, Augie? Do you know what he did last week? And it's like, oh, your tío, do you know what he's doing right now? He's over at the bar. He's like all those kinds of... Like, seriously, you look at me like crazy. That's just a regular Tuesday night.
I that someone's named Augie. Like, that's a great name. I just appreciate it.
You just like it because it's from The Waitress.
No.
Uh-huh.
No.
Is it not in Waitress?
It is, but we haven't gotten to be able to talk about that musical and or that movie, so I'm putting that one on the back burner.
But I love a lot of the characters that are in this, a lot of the bigger, and I mean bigger as in personality-wise, those bigger characters, they really carry a lot of that familiarity with me. So it's, as much as I doted on like how Jimmy Smith really did great in the film, the fact that everybody in the film carries that type of familiarity with me, there's a lot of really standout performances. But you were saying, sorry to cut you off, but you were talking about how you appreciated Daniela.
Yeah, it was, it had a very, in a more modernized way, it reminded me, because we were talking about musicals and seeing Latino or Latin communities represented in film and film musicals, my first thought went to West Side Story, because when we start dealing with the Sharks, which we have the incomparable Rita Moreno, who is in, like, I literally was watching One Day at a Time, and she's the matriarch.
She's in the remake of the series.
Of One Day at a Time. She's also Tup Tim from The King and I, which was the film version, not just the stage version, but she's Anita. And she is in, and she's also in the remake, the Steven Spielberg remake for West Side Story too, mm-hmm. which is nuts. Anyway.
Quick note about that. Actually, the John Chu and the team that was doing the filming for In the Heights, we're literally blocks away from where Steven Spielberg was filming the West Side Story remake. In fact, there was a story that Lin-Manuel was saying how during one of the filmings, there's actually one of their catering trucks that's in the background of one of the scenes in the Heights. Not to mention, Lin-Manuel made his way over to the filming area where they were filming one of the songs, and he got a chance to see the actual song being filmed. So,
well, it helps, he kind of lives still in Washington Heights,
neighborhood, yeah.
But so as Anita carries a lot of that. She carries in West Side Story, brief side street, she carries a lot of hope for what America can provide for them as a community, for what they can do, because this is a new place, the land of opportunity. Rita is also brought up in the string of names of the strong women. So your Chitarita, Chitarita Frida. Then there's Isabel. He's gonna look it up. It's okay. I'm gonna die anyway. But she's brought up, and so Daniela brings some of that same opportunity and optimism, but now it's with established flair. In one of the songs, right before they end up moving the entire salon, she. It's when she's in the salon before the No Me Diga song, where she's like, our people survived slave ships, conquistadors, and then she's like, you can't, we can't make it on the D train to the Grand Concourse, like, come on. And it was this great, like, it was this powerful moment in such a weirdly, not weirdly comedic, but it was in such a comedic way, and it was so powerful, and it was reminding people, like, look, this is where you came from, and you're griping because you got to take a train, like, come on, get out of here with that. So, yeah, I really liked her.
What about you, Spence? Who were some of the stand-up characters for you?
Claudia. I was into her whole story through this movie.
Yeah.
From just, like, her going into that ridiculous dry cleaner who's like, well, it's gonna be $117 to dry clean 9 napkins or whatever the heck those were.
Yep.
Plus that song, like you know, to send her off, like, that was pretty good.
The Paciencia y Fe, Patience and Faith song.
I really like that one. And, like, because I didn't know her at all, so, like, when she just belts out, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool.
You're like, oh shoot, she got skills.
Yeah, so, like, she just wowed me, like, pretty much anytime she was on the screen. I really liked her.
Yeah, and it's her character was such a difficult one for me to kind of process with, because I let's see, last Thursday, which I don't even know what day that was, last Thursday marked the 2-year anniversary of the passing I'm sorry, the 17th marked the 2-year passing of my grandma, my abuela. And watching the movie with that in mind, the character that she created, just personified in the film, it spoke volumes to me. Like, the whole film was, it was a little difficult watching her in the film. And obviously, full spoilers if you haven't seen it. It's been a musical since 2005. So I mean, come on.
Some of us didn't know it was a musical since 2005.
It's okay if you found out about 2007 to 2008. You still good?
The Broadway musical has the same thing that happens, and you do have Abuela Claudia pass during the course of the musical. Mm-hmm. And that was a really difficult scene. That whole section of the film was really difficult for me because my abuela, she had a similar journey. You know, she migrated to the U.S. She worked as a vegetable and fruit picker for most of her life growing up. She met my grandfather in that way. You know, she had her dreams and aspirations. She had her family over in Puerto Rico. Sorry, can't even talk right. And she passed away, and it makes you wonder, like, those last moments, especially with this, it was kind of a nice way to have a sense of peace in the end of it, of how when my grandma passed, prayerfully, that's how peaceful it was for her to be able to reflect on the life that she had and to be able to give herself that satisfaction of knowing she did the best she could and it was more than enough. And this musical really, it was a really difficult place to be sitting in terms of watching it, because never really gave myself the opportunity to think that way about it or about the situation. And watching this movie and being able to see and being able to process it while sitting down, yeah, I cried. I kid you not. But the fact is that character, I think, was the hardest for me to really kind of revisit and give a proper, like, breakdown in my mind as to how great. Because I kid you not, I am more than 100% certain that Abuela Claudia was probably the best character in the whole film. Mm-hmm. The problem is, for me, is I'm not really there yet to revisit that. Mm-hmm. But I'm appreciative of being able to see how the genius of the people behind this film put this into perspective, kind of even helping a little bit of the healing that I needed for that whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's she is such a pivotal character in the whole film, and you see her impact, like most, you know, Latina grandmas, they are the matriarch, if you will, of the whole family. They take care of everything from cooking to fighting fights to breaking up fights to giving cafecitos to everybody and pan dulce, like everything.
Well,
so,
and Abuela Claudia and Usnavi actually brings it up in the opening number that when she comes in and his fridge is broken, like, first off, he lives with her. And then he says goodbye to her. And then when she gets introduced, actually in the opening number, it's her wisdom of, you know, well, if it's broken, try some condensed milk with your café. So you have café con leche. And then he brings up that that's Abuela Claudia. She's not really my abuela, but she's adopted the community. This is mm-hmm. her block. And out there is her escuela. So it's her school. And he acknowledges that this is her family, even mm-hmm. if it's not her blood family. This is her family. This community is her family. She is the matriarch of this entire community. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to see the honoring for the memorial when she does pass.
Yeah.
The turnout, which is just it's so well done. It's so earnest. If you haven't seen it, please just go watch the movie. But it's so earnest, it's simple, it's quiet. It's not a loud weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's just a quiet thank you. And it's so moving. And when we get to comparisons, I'll tell you about where those things fall in line with the movie versus the musical.
But no, I agree. I think we both agree with you, Spence. I think she's a phenomenal character. For me, it's still a little difficult to reflect back fully, but I'm glad you brought her up, because I think she was really great.
Well, like, she did, like, kind of make me start thinking about my own grandmothers. Mm. Like, even though they were nothing like her, just like, but, like, you know, like...
Nobody has to know. Sheesh.
But, like, even just that, I was like, oh, I don't think I can do the funeral scene or whatever they're doing. And so I did kind of skip just a little bit past that, because I was like, I can't do this right now.
Well, the nice thing is they didn't really give you a funeral scene, because thank the Lord, none of us would have been able to handle it. We would have lost our marbles. And then with her, there was one other person that I just wanted to touch real quick on, was Sunny.
He's good.
That was the cousin that we see in the shop. His father was a surprise cameo, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
And he did a great job being just enough, like, cocky arrogance and balancing it with, like, being down to earth and just being fun, that it was kind of like, he's a kid brother, he's everybody's cousin, like, he's the kid down the street that you're like, ah, get out of here, okay, come back, like, it was nice.
Yeah. Kind of moving forward in terms of the comparison you were talking about, you have actually a couple of differences in terms of from the musical to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So lay it on us. What are some of those breakdowns?
So first off, since we're siguing, even though I used, I'll use Sunny first and then I'll backtrack. So Sunny in the musical, he isn't, in the movie, he is considered a dreamer. He's undocumented. They decided to put that more in for the movie than the actual musical itself.
Well, and also for social commentary, what's going on right now. Because obviously during the whole time when the movie was being filmed, you know, DACA was being threatened to be removed from the government. So, yeah.
The other one for lineup for songs. So, Paciencia y Fe with Abuela Claudia is actually right after the 96,000 number. So when they're talking about, ooh, what would you do with $96,000? She actually sings Paciencia y Fe, and it's noted inside that song that she has the winning ticket. It also doesn't herald her death in the musical, or that she is passing. So it's in a different place entirely. He kind of syncs it up a little differently. Another big one is actually Nina and Benny. So Nina and Benny, which Nina we haven't really touched on, is the daughter of Kevin Rosario. He's the cab company owner that we see.
Yeah.
And Benny works for him as dispatch. So Nina's, most of her storyline is she's the one that, quote unquote, got out. She got a scholarship to Stanford. She's been doing, you know, great. She's coming back. And the other characters at the time that they first... when we meet her, we kind of start figuring out something's not right. You come to find out in the movie, she's decided that she lost her scholarship, and there's microaggressions that have been happening at Stanford, as well as she misses the community and she wants to come home. Musical, she's been working 2-3 jobs and has lost her scholarship because she's just trying to make money to survive. So she's coming back with that. Now, Nina and Benny in the musical, also, sidetrack, Nina's mom in the musical is alive. There's a song for Kevin. So mom and Nina's parents both have separate songs. So that's probably why they cut out one of the songs, because poor Jimmy might not have been able to sing it. In the movie, Nina's mom's dead. In the musical, she's alive and acts as a mediator between the fights that Kevin Rosario and Nina are having together, father-daughter fights. But with Nina and Benny in the musical, they haven't had a relationship. Like, it's been this kind of not on again, off again thing, but they're like attracted to each other. And then within the musical, during the blackout, they end up finally getting together. And her dad basically tells her that because Benny is black, she cannot be with him. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Oh.
That's a big shift. So that's in the musical versus the movie, where we see that they dated for a little bit before, and they broke it off because she was going to college. Now she's coming back. They're going to get together. It's going to be maybe like a long distance thing. They're going to try. And then dad thinks it's okay. Like, those are some of the bigger ones. Daniela and Carla in the musical are not a couple. In the movie, they are. Are you confused?
No.
You made the face of like, I'm sorry, what?
Well, they're just listed as friends.
No, in the movie, they're supposed to be a couple.
Oh, okay.
They wake up, so in the opening number, it's literally you blink and you miss it. They're in bed together, they lean over and they give each other a kiss and everything else, and then they get out of the bed. But it's so fast that you don't even, like, you have to be watching.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's some of it. And they took out 20 minutes of songs, and they moved things around, so that would make, you know, a little more smooth flow of storytelling, I guess.
For any of the songs that they took out, are you upset that they took any of those out?
Yes and no, and I can tell you why. So, Nina's mom as a character, She has a song, and then Nina's dad have a song. They each have separate songs. I understood why they took it out, because, like I said, Jimmy might not have been able to hit it.
Right.
But also, they wanted to drive focus of him as a parent willing to sacrifice everything for his daughter and give a little more of that space to create that confrontation. So I see why things were taken out. Same thing, one of the reprises actually ended up being the end credit scene, like all the way at the end, which was just kind of fun. So I'm not as hurt that the songs were taken out. Would I love to see someone try to cut them in? Yeah, but please don't do it. Just don't do it.
I just read the whole article. I'm like, that was so under the radar. Like,
yeah,
I didn't even see that. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. But like, the problem is, it was so early in the movie. I'm like, wait, who was everyone?
Was
my problem.
Okay,
with it.
I mean, cool.
Like, if I watched it again, I'd be like, got it.
Yeah, I mean, hey, cool. More power to it. Did you guys have? Oh, so really quick. So there was an article I read the other day from the New Yorker, where it said, it was really interesting because it stated that it wasn't realistic enough for it to truly represent the Hispanic community or the community that is within Washington Heights.
Currently, yeah. So you're thinking about the one that I had something similar along the lines where there had been a group of people that said there is not enough, was it Afro-Dominican representation for Washington Heights who lives there now? I know that was part of the argument, and Lin-Manuel responded and said, I'm listening. He didn't apologize for the casting. I don't think he's not in charge of casting, but they were saying that there wasn't enough additional representation for the community that lives there presently. Is that what you were?
Yeah, something to that effect. It's just the idea that this movie is anything but like has a sense of authenticity kind of reads a little naive to me. The story, so this is the article. It says the generic Latinidad of In the Heights. So it's stating that the Latinidad is like the kind of melting pot, if you will, of Latin cultures. But they're going into things like saying how, and mind you, this probably is what, I don't know if you read this particular one, but how the difference is like, you don't know everybody's different until you see like that Carnaval del barrio song scene, the dance scene where everybody's dancing and they're highlighting different things. And it's like, oh, but because everybody's Dominican, that they should be doing more bachata, but it's like, but you know, they're incorporating all these other things. And this is the weird part. It says the plot ignores intra-Latino conflicts to create a fantasy of a harmonious unity and a commonly held cultura, which is culture. And so the movie ultimately authenticates the notion of a generic and commodified Latinidad, where everyone, regardless of their national origins and histories, is fundamentally the same. So it's saying that the movie...
It didn't have enough infighting?
It didn't have enough separation of...
Right?
Of the whole... I didn't read the full article because I lost it after it was saying like, oh, you know, that the best kind of Latino that's represented in this film is a white Latino. It's a more, you know, lighter colored Latino, kind of like the whole thing with African American actors and how the only the lighter skinned black actors are the ones who get the bigger roles. Like it's saying that this is what this whole article, it upset me because of the fact that I don't need to see why, you know, M13 or MS-13, whatever they call the Salvadorian gang, you know, why they have problems with like the Mexican mafia, or why, you know, the Puerto Ricans and the Cubans have this riff, which I don't think there is, but you know, I wasn't going to a movie to get a history lesson. I was going to see this movie to experience an opportunity of seeing my culture represented without having to worry about, you know, making sure nobody wore the wrong colors, you know? You know, oh, he's wearing blue, he's this, or he's wearing red, he's that. Like, no. The idea that there are people out there who are willing to dive so deep into a musical, number one, that is... The idea of this movie critiquing it in this way is like watching Bambi and wondering why it's not more authentic to how deer actually act when X, Y, and Z happens. It's like, that's not what we're wanting to see. People who go see Bambi are seeing the movie because it resonates with them. It's something that they enjoy watching. It's a classic film. The reason why people, Latinos, are watching this is because it's an opportunity to see it without the worries and the concerns that we have in the real world. We already have enough to deal with when it comes to family members or people we know, or anyone for that matter, who are, you know, caught up in gangs, caught up in drugs, caught up in prostitution, caught up in you know, being dead end fathers, dead end mothers, orphans, you know, neglected people. There's already enough of that around us. Why do we need to have that hard hit into a film like this that most of the songs speak towards the building up? It's like you do the whole great opening number of In the Heights, you know, in Washington Heights, or what's the song called? In the Heights? I forget the name of the song. Yeah. Either way, that opening number, having that great song there, and then the very next scene it transitions to are a bunch of junkies in the alleyway who are shooting up because, you know, for whatever reason. It's like, how does that show that elevated mindset of making all of your hard work mean something from that just previous song? It doesn't make sense. And people who are putting it out there like, oh, well, you know what? This isn't Latino enough for me. You know, I need people throwing up gang signs, and I need people doing X, Y, and Z, and I need people, you know, because that's the Latino community that I know. It's like, no, that makes no sense. And you're perpetuating the continual stereotype that all Hispanic actors or Hispanic stories or Hispanic Latin core stories have to have some element of that negative impact.
Well, there's something that it speaks to that too, is if I remember, I think it was an interview with Lin when he initially was trying to bring forward the musical. I can't remember if it was some of the producers for the musical. I think it was for the musical. They looked at him and said, you know, Nina can't be coming home just because, you know, she's lost her scholarship. She's got to be like pregnant, or she's got to have an addiction, or some, because it didn't make sense to have somebody in the musical who had worked so hard to get out that suddenly she was coming back unless she had a problem. Yeah.
Did they not know what her problem was with school?
Or? They thought that it wasn't enough to drive people to want to relate to her. And the thing is that there are people today who, when they're working 2 and 3 jobs, they still fall short. And with the movie, they tried to establish that the microaggressions that she was experiencing at school were what had additionally driven her to come back, because it had shaken her confidence in herself. And it had created that, just that need to be home, that need for the community, the need for the support that she couldn't get out west. So, like, yeah, it is infuriating to literally look at somebody and go, look, you can't make that movie unless you're, like, one of your protagonists is a junkie, is a hooker, is a this. It's like, no.
That's so annoying, because, like, never been dad or anything, but when, like, Nina was telling that story about how she got searched, I was like, let me drive down there and talk to someone.
Yeah.
Because I will blast someone out right now.
Yeah. And this is, I think this is the biggest kind of ridiculousness of this article. And then I'm going to put this away, because going, revisiting this is, you know, making me pickles. But the there's this line in this article, and says, the big point of this big film is to seek comfort in the small, and that also puts limits on the characters' political imaginations. They assert their dignity, quote, in small ways, end quote, and, quote, little details, end quote, trusting that everything will be fine if you just have a sueñito, a little dream. And it's like,
no. That's not even the, no.
And yeah, that's.
Close that tab. Now. Make it go away.
I did. I closed it up. But it's frustrating to see that. And you can clearly see that whoever saw this wasn't going to the film to see the film.
No.
They were going to try to rip it apart or look for the little things, because
they just hate Lin-Manuel Miranda or the culture as a whole.
But like, that line itself, that overlooks everything that the film is trying to do. It's not saying, oh, you have to be happy with what you have. It's knowing where your heart lies. And recognizing that that little sueñito can come in all packages, big or small. And for him, that little sueñito was also his daughter, which I don't think is
spoiler.
you know, that little sueñito is something that is not a very small thing. And it's going to grow. And that dream will grow with it. And it's like, It frustrated me, because the fact that people who look at the film and just see that, or people who look at it and like, oh, it was this, it was that, like, are you really looking at the film for what it is? Are you looking at the film for what you want it to be? And the problem for a lot of people is, when it comes to musicals, and I'm sure, pretty sure, Spence, you probably could attest to this because you once had this mindset. You go and you see a movie, and if it has musicality to it or anything, you immediately like, nope, not going to listen to this. I'm done. I'm shutting that out. And the problem with that is that when you start shutting things out and you only listen to what you want to hear, you're only going to listen to what you want to hear. And you're going to get only what you want out of it. And if all you're getting out of it is a negative reaction or a negative response, you're going to reflect that. Oh, yeah, it was garbage because of X, Y, and Z. Or, oh, it was this because it had a lot of music. Amy and I know someone who...
Yeah, this is just the other infuriating. Day, literally... Literally, there was a conversation going on. She walked in, and Eddie was trying to show the opening sequence to someone just to get them interested. And she walks in and goes, ah, that's garbage. Like, you shouldn't watch it. Just don't. And I'm just like, excuse me. First off, you don't get to walk in here and tell somebody that something's garbage when you think that Twilight is the highest form of movie of movie art ever. Like, backtrack your truck, park it, and like, shoo. Like, come on. Okay, I understand musicals are not for everyone. I fully understand that, because I am not part of the majority that go, oh, I hear this song and this is what it evokes for me.
Like, to be quite frank, like, some of the musicals, and not I joked around earlier, but to be frank, there are some of the musicals that you listed earlier that just, they're not my cup of tea.
Exactly.
And also
there's some of them are written by old white dead dudes where the expectation for some of them this is years of musical theater and understanding that that diversity comes at it initially came at a cost. You were the maid. You were the thug. You were there wasn't druggies, but you were the lesser. And this takes such a forward step and does what Sondheim did for musicals, Lin-Manuel is doing for diversity in musicals.
Yeah.
And yes, you can definitely have you can have people of color in starring roles, but when you look at not even but when you look at MAME, which is or Hello Dolly, Lucille Ball I think did Hello Dolly.
And MAME.
Yeah. She did a lot. But she is a white red-haired lady. And every version of those movies that I have seen, it has all been a white woman that is your Aunt MAME, is Dolly. Like, that's it. There was never an option for somebody else to come in and take those reins. The part can say one thing, but how the casting director puts it into their perspective is always somebody that is not a person of color.
Yeah.
And that is utterly frustrating when trying to introduce people to musicals to go, you remind me of this person.
Yeah.
So.
And that's kind of where that situation was leading. And the idea of the fact that, yes, you are welcome to your opinion. And there are many people who share a very heavy opinion. And sometimes their opinion is louder. Sometimes their opinion is, it's a little bit more askew than others. However, much like a butthole, it's an opinion.
Everybody's got one. Keep it to yourself.
And nobody wants to see it. You know, it's a thing where if you're coming into a room and someone is trying to show somebody something, the first thing you do not want to do, especially if the person trying to show somebody has a movie podcast and is going to talk about it, you don't bash the movie in front of that person and not expect to have it come back up.
Three steps into the room. They were three steps into the room, Spencer. Literally turn around and go, ah, and they're standing in front of the screen waving their arm. This is terrible. You don't. I'm like, excuse me? No, thank you. Like, check yourself. Seriously. Like, come on. And then that's so disheartening because then the other people in the room go, that voice is louder than the one that's trying to show me something that thinks that I can connect with it. And that is the gift of movie musicals, is bringing an experience that happens on stage into your home. The Paciencia y Fe number in and of itself is starting to be considered one of the best musical moments in movie history of all time.
Yeah.
Like, that is the impact that has, which regardless of who sees it, there's a connection there. And it's the understanding of what it brings. And it is so frustrating to see poo-pooers and naysayers who literally look at an art and go, well, that just sucks. Like,
why do you have an interest in that? That's garbage. Or why do you... And I stress the fact that it's the outcome of that situation is the fact that I have a louder platform, so I can say this, and I know there's going to be people who hear it, but don't be ignorant is what I'm going to leave this whole situation with. Don't be ignorant, because if you're going to choose to have a negative thought or a negative mindset about something, let other people have that own opinion on their own. You don't need to throw up your hands and do whatever. And if you do, chances are you're going to get called out, i.e. like here. So think of this as the no me digas scene from In the Heights. But as we kind of round out this conversation, were there any other highlights or issues you guys had with the film? Spence, I'll start with you because Amy's looking at you like you got something to say.
Okay, I have an issue. But okay. This is so stupid. It's not with the film.
That's
okay. It's with HBO Max.
Understood. I think we've had this one, but let's go.
Okay. So here's the thing. I am not a Spanish speaker. I did really poorly in Spanish in high school. So, like, I was like, okay, here's what I'll do. Like, because, like, they seem to be talking Spanish, and I'm like, I don't know some of these words.
Turned on the captions, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Do a darn thing.
They didn't do a
thing. All it does
is
in Spanish.
I'm like, what are you doing? And then I got mad, and I flipped it to Spanish. It's, like, right there, and I'm like, hello, I'd like to see this.
I'm still okay with this.
I can't leave it in Spanish because I don't know what they're saying in English when they're speaking English in the song, because I'm really bad at understanding song lyrics. It's an ongoing problem, but like it's so frustrating. That's like, weird. If someone is speaking write it. That's the thing. Just don't put speaking Spanish.
Oh,
like they do. I remember distinctly in one space for Abuela Claudia when she says paciencia y fe, and it says patience and faith on the bottom, and then she's the only one that gets it. Like nobody else does. And you're like, you special lady. Like, we remember that.
Yep.
That was my frustration.
Frustration with HBO Max. Okay. What about you, Amy?
Tidbits of delight. So let's talk about really briefly, and I will skate over them. The 96,000 number. It is available if you would like to just watch that entire sequence on the YouTubes, as well as I think the first almost the full first 8 minutes of the movie if you don't have HBO Max. But the 96,000 number evoked, first off, just old Hollywood with the totally sequenced dance number in the pool. Mm-hmm. There were some straight up synchronized swimmers in that. Like, get it. So awesome. Also, Donald Trump was taken out of that song, which makes me really happy.
In the beginning, Benny is talking about how if he won the 96,000, uh-huh, that he would go and he would go and tee off with Tiger Woods as his caddy. Huh. So that was changed from back in 2008, going and playing golf alongside Donald Trump, something, whatever. So the line was changed from Donald Trump to Tiger Woods because it was...
It was the right move.
That line did
also
not age well.
I feel like he doesn't understand how much $96,000
But see, and that's the thing, that like when you come from a place that you're working all day, mm-hmm, and you're like, I'll never see a large amount of money, a sudden large amount of money is like, oh shoot. So like the hope, everybody like, Ma, check my ticket. Like, did I win? Mm-hmm. Was so much fun to see. Mm-hmm. The other one, When the Sun Goes Down. So when Nina and Benny, they're on the fire escape, they're sitting out there and the sun's going down and it looks like it's starting to turn into golden hour with the shot, mm-hmm, at the bridge. And then they pull a Fred Astaire when he leans over the railing and they're dancing up the wall. It was, mm-hmm, very, I want to say Top Hat, like Ginger Rogers, Fred Astaire. It was great. It was so lovingly done. All of their choreography was stunning. And yeah, like there's so many little tidbits that I could literally go into detail and talk about, that the initial line that opens the entire show is lights up on Washington Heights up. It's a stage direction. Mm-hmm. It's literally telling you exactly what's going on. And it gives this kind of aspect of almost that Usnavi is directing the show. Yeah. Yeah. Which is also done and performed in Hamilton, like you see it in Hamilton. There's also notes and some melodic riffs and melodies that you see in different songs here that somehow seem to make their way over in tone into Hamilton. Anthony Ramos he also plays, oh my gosh.
Philip.
He plays Little Philip in Hamilton, but he also plays, Lawrence. Lawrence? He's one of the other guys. He's in Hamilton as well, but he had mentioned that...
John Lawrence and Philip Hamilton.
Yes! He mentioned that he was able to see In the Heights before he, you know, started actually acting on Broadway, mm-hmm, and it was so moving, and he was so excited to see people like him represented, that it was just this really great kind of... It's this amalgam and love letter to the community of people that are not just underrepresented, but it's a celebration of the day-to-day struggle, the ups and downs of life, but we're here together. So I'm going to pronounce it wrong because I know Eddie's going to correct me, but the Carnaval del Barrio.
Carnaval.
Carnaval de Barrio.
del Barrio.
Del Barrio. Yeah. is great because it's not a roll call, but it gives space musically for everyone to kind of come out and be proud of where they come from. And then the Piragua. Why did I say pin? That's wrong. Sorry guys. Piragua, the reprise is actually the end credit scene, which works even better. Like, and it's Lin, which is so fun just to see him having fun. Like, I love when people do that with their work, where they get in there and they're like, do you know what? I just want to have fun. Let's go. Yep. So, yeah.
So, wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. I'll go ahead and start it out. The film passes for me. It definitely holds many different areas of reflection for myself, not just as a avid movie fan and a film critic, but as a proud Latino, you know, recognizing and seeing all the parts of my community and my tradition being highlighted on the silver screen. I can't not be proud of that. So for me, the film passes. And in terms of Monocles, I'm going to have to give it a 5 out of 5. I liked pretty much every aspect of it on so many different levels, and mind you, even levels that I haven't really processed through fully. This movie speaks to the multitude of who we are as a people, and I'm excited to see where musicals continue to turn into as the time goes on, because like I said, we still got Dear Evan Hansen coming around the corner, which Dear Evan Hansen is a pretty powerful musical all by itself. I'm not too sure about Benjamin Platt in that wig. But
that wig.
I don't think I've seen the photos of this yet.
Oh, we're gonna have to see this after this episode.
After the show, please don't do it now, because it's gonna cloud your Monocle viewing, and you're just gonna go nope.
Okay. But yeah, I'm excited that this is now a part of our film repertoire. I'm proud to say that I saw this movie and I plan to see it several more times, and I give it a 5. What about you, Spence?
Musicals are hard for me. Like, I'm starting to learn about them. Some of them I'm okay with. Some of them are, like, hard for me to get through. This one, I liked it. But, like, yeah, like you were saying, like, the dancing on the wall thing, like, that was pretty awesome. Like, there's, like, lots of, like, things in this movie that I really did, like a lot and felt like they had great messages. It's just, I'm still getting used to, like, listening to songs and musicals. Disney taught me bad. So, you know, it's about unlearning and becoming a better person. So, right now, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. If you love musicals, it's probably going to be a 5 out of 5 for you.
There you go. What about you, Ames?
Hello. So, of course, this film passes for me. No cracked monocles. These are some straight up 5 out of 5 kooka sparkly monocles for all days. I adored this movie. I love musicals as a whole. This seemed to be something that I'm going to rewatch it. There are lots of things that I miss. Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course, is a lyrical genius, because there are so many layers to everything that goes in there. So trying to catch this man's turn of phrase, turn of coin, when he brings up a really subtle musical, like Take the A Train in the opening number, that you wouldn't catch unless you knew that it was part of a, like, it's hardcore, people. It is hardcore. It's a lot, but it's such a wonderful journey. And much like Mr. Spencer is unlearning the Disney way of musicals, I hope people take opportunities to enjoy this one.
All I have to say is more musicals need to be made in order for people to, like, not just rely on Disney for them.
Very true.
We'll have a talk, because I've been little shot.
We've seen it.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
So then we're aiming that direction.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got over 270 episodes. Also check us out on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at facebook.com/filmlosophers, and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. This is a really unique conversation, in terms of part of it is also kind of deconstructing the parts that are popular and the parts that are liked and the parts that kind of create a sense of strain to watch it, especially with people like Spencer, who obviously we realize really long musicals don't work for you. So, but we will dive deeper into that into the next one, and we do hope to hear from you soon and you hear from us. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm part-timer Amy.
Class dismissed.